show. Tell us about it, Michael.
America.
Thank you.
Wake up, America!
Wake up, America.
It's time for Michael Dean After Dark. I'm your host, Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, and this is the Late Night Feisty Liberty Show. We have a rotating stable of interesting insomniac co-hosts. Plus, we leave the phone lines open. So if the hamster in your brain is keeping you up, please call in. Please call in. Yeah. If the hamster in your brain is keeping you up, please call in. This is Michael Dean, and it's After Dark, and this show is called Michael Dean After Dark. And if you want to call in, our phone number, if you're listening live, is 1-855-660-4261. That's 1-855-660-4261. And my co-host tonight, one of our rotating spinning on a spit guests, is Jack Johnson. Hello, Jack.
How you doing, Michael? How's everything going up there?
It's going pretty good. You're let's see, you're not in the Shenandoah Valley. Which valley are you in?
No, I am not. I am actually over near Maggie Valley, which is right around and down through the area located next to Asheville, North Carolina.
Cool. Yeah, we just the Freedom Fiends just added a couple new radio stations today in the Shenandoah Valley, Virginia. I didn't know how far that extended, even though I used to live in Virginia. I guess it's a kind of isolated place, Shenandoah. Mm-hmm. I had to look it up. I'd never been there. So there's something that happened this week, this weekend. It was the anniversary of the death of Popcorn Sutton. Tell us a little bit about Popcorn Sutton.
Popcorn Sutton was our best moonshiner. He typified what Appalachian outlaw culture stood for. Bikers, all types of free living, free willing folks had a hero's respect for Popcorn. Claire Wolf might have wrote about him. I know Bill Bupert, one of the guests you have on the show here, definitely wrote about him at ZeroGov. And Popcorn, whenever the government said that you couldn't sell white liquor, Popcorn said, "Forget that." He fired up the still every time. They would literally pick him up and throw him in jail, and as soon as he got out, he'd go right back to making corn liquor, and that's just the way he was. He unfortunately died March 16th. We celebrated the anniversary of his death this year on Sunday.
He killed himself, right?
That's what we believe.
That's the story. Yeah.
That's the story. Yeah, that's correct. A lot of folks in the mountains, they tend to believe because he had cancer that it most likely he did kill himself because he did not want to go in and serve the sentence that the ATF had charged him with. But yeah, there's some speculation.
What did they charge him with?
They were charging him with distribution and taxes, distribution of untaxable alcohol. So that was the reason why the Bureau of ATF got involved, because, quote unquote, it was being transported from North Carolina to Tennessee over state line and into Georgia. So it became a federal jurisdiction issue at that point. So James Kavanaugh, who many people may or may not recall, was the man that made the call at Waco when the Bradley tanks rolled in and dropped the white phosphorus in a place called Fire. He right before he left the ATF, one of the last things that he wanted to do was to have Popcorn Sutton thrown in jail. And he knew from talking to his family and also prosecutors and the agents that had known Popcorn for years, both North Carolina State Department of Revenue and the Tennessee State Department of Revenue, that Popcorn was going to die if he actually went to jail. Kavanaugh really didn't care and said, go ahead and have Popcorn thrown in jail anyway.
Man, that's evil. I mean, I can't.
We're trying to take tyranny light, but it's no other way of describing what happened.
Yeah. Well, I've described the Michael Dean After Dark show as it's a game show, and the loser is the person who talks about tyranny most. And I don't want to talk a lot about tyranny, but you can't really celebrate the glory of Popcorn Sutton without talking about a little bit about tyranny. So,
right.
Yeah. You know, and it's not that uncommon for people who are facing decades in federal prison to take their own life, or I should say, it's not rare for people facing that to
die of apparent suicides. Maybe the government murders them and makes it look like a suicide. But I would be more willing to bet that in some cases, people do kill themselves when they're facing these untenable sentences that the feds love to met out. And it's just evil, man. It's it's people trying to, Popcorn Sutton was trying to engage in lawful, in my mind, commerce, commerce, a good product for a good price. And it was obviously good. People kept flocking to buy it from him, and nobody died from it, right?
Right. Nobody died. One of the things Bill Buebert points out in his article is that when Popcorn was asked whether or not he would sell any type of white liquor, because, white liquor sometimes can be tainted. There was stuff like from Chicago, the Bronfman brew that came down and people would get sick after drinking it. And Popcorn, being a classic anarcho-capitalist, said, no way. He wants his people to come back and drink it and come back. That's what he wanted. Buy more.
I don't know the phrase white liquor. I mean, I think you mean clear like water, but what does white liquor mean?
Moonshine.
Okay.
When we say white liquor, we mean moonshine. So.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, and during Prohibition, the U.S. government actually poisoned liquor. It turned into what is now denatured alcohol. Like, if you buy ethyl alcohol for use in, chemistry or something, and you want to buy it cheap and don't want to pay a liquor tax on it, you can get denatured alcohol, which is ethyl alcohol with a tiny bit of methyl alcohol in it, enough that it'll make you blind or kill you if you drink it, denatured. And we've said on the Freedom Fiends that the government likes to denature everything. They like to remove nature from the equation. They like to take away what's natural and destroy it. But before there was a thing called denatured alcohol, which you can get now, they just poisoned liquor. Like they would, raid some people and, throw them in prison, take all their money, take all their liquor, probably sell some of it out the back door, but then put strychnine in some of it and then let it back through into the market, and people would die. And they did it because they were so sure they were right about their twisted morality that they were willing to murder people. And they do it. They do it all the time, man. That is government. It is murder, theft, fraud and aggression, but that's not what we're here to talk about. Talk more about Popcorn Sutton and why he was really cool.
Popcorn was good at not just dodging the law, but encouraging people to make their own moonshine. He believed that it was the antithesis of Appalachian culture. It was something that allowed us to be free at a
the
time
antithesis
period.
Or the pinnacle of
the
Appalachian
pinnacle,
culture.
I should say.
I would say the ATF is the antithesis of Appalachian culture.
Right. I got tongue-tied. But he believed that by teaching people how to grow their own corn and to set up their own still and to make some of the best Appalachian moonshine possible, that they could free themselves from the tyranny at hand. He was absolutely a fan of not having a product taxed. He would go to great lengths to make sure that people could get a hold of what he had. And he was also approachable. He had a shop in Maggie Valley for a long time where people could come up and meet Popcorn Sutton. He had little books. There were roadside stands in the mountains.
He wrote books on. He wrote how-to books on making moonshine. Think about that too. Like how many people engage in commerce and give away their trade secrets? That's pretty cool. I mean, he believed in his product so much that he didn't want to hold it tight and patent it and keep it to himself. He wanted to share it with the world. Mm-hmm. Probably knew he wouldn't be around forever, so he wanted to spread his knowledge. And he wrote books and he made home videos that he sold. Now, did you ever meet him?
I only met him once.
Tell me about it.
And I met him in 2006. I was at a alternative festival out in the mountains. I'll leave it at that. And I was told that I needed to be at the front gate of this festival to meet a very important person. And I was with a lot of older Appalachian guys that had legends and reputations of their own. Some of them that had been with various motorcycle clubs. And we waited and waited. And this very small but spry man came through. He was small by then.
He was like 62 and he was in ill health when he died, right?
Right, That's correct. And in 2006, he was already pretty sick. But he just he had a nature to him that was natural, genuine. You felt like you could trust him right off the bat, and he didn't put you off. He just brought his little box in, and everybody knew what was in the little box, and they bought whatever it was, and he went on his way. And while the meeting was brief, it was driven home to me, because even at that point, I had been in the military and had been all over the world and come back home, but I did not quite grasp how important he was to our culture. And after that experience, I began to have a lot of respect for who he was and what he meant to Appalachia, for sure.
He was in a Discovery Channel kind of documentary. That's the first I saw of him, which is probably the most pop culture way to experience him. And I even so, his personality kind of shined through. He seemed like a really likable cuss, I guess I'd say.
Yeah, it's that kind of Appalachian hard edge, but approachable person. If they like you here, they like you, and if they don't, they don't. But you know, as long as you let people be, and that was his nature. You know, live and let live is let people be and let them do what they're going to do, and life will work out great for everybody. And that's generally how Appalachian culture works in total. But he was, for lack of better words, he was distilled Appalachian culture, and popcorn is irreplaceable. Yeah, kind of a pun, but he meant a lot to a lot of folks, and we don't want to see his memory just go by the wayside, because he does have a lot of moral values that he can teach to young libertarians and folks that are wanting to learn about anarcho-capitalism.
I like that he wore his trademark bib overalls even into federal court.
Amen. Yes.
We'll be back with more on Michael Dean After Dark with Jack Johnson, talking about memories of Popcorn Sutton after this.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Michael Dean After Dark. Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Uh-huh. This is Michael Dean After Dark. We're talking about Popcorn Sutton, who's kind of a folk hero where Jack Johnson is from. Jack Johnson met Popcorn Sutton. You may know Popcorn Sutton if you're just tuning in from, you may have seen that Discovery Channel thing about moonshiners, which was kind of faked in a way. Like, basically, it purported to show people making illegal moonshine, but it said in tiny letters at the end and beginning of it, this is just, you know, basically acting. But it was people who were actual moonshiners, but they were acting because they're not going to commit federal crimes on camera with their faces showing. So tell us a little bit more about the man that that Hank Williams III mentioned in a song. That's when you know you're cool, man.
Well, to understand Popcorn, you have to wrap your head around where we're from. The area of the mountains we're in is called Southern Appalachia, and it's a confluence of a lot of river systems in addition to the tri-state area, which is Georgia, Tennessee, and North Carolina. So you have Knoxville, then you have across the mountains in Rabun County, Georgia, and then you have Haywood County, which was where popcorn was from. When it came to Run and Shine, they would basically bank on the fact that whenever Shine was being distributed, they could leave one jurisdiction in one state and be literally over in the next state within just a few miles. So if the sheriff knew that they were running Shine that night, then he could send out some deputies to keep track of them. But they could also skip from North Carolina to Tennessee to Georgia, and in some cases they've traveled far enough up the road, Kentucky and Virginia and West Virginia. Have you heard the song Steve Earle's Copperhead Road? Of course you have, but that's based on Run and Shine in the mountains here. And that's the environment that popcorn is from. And so there was always this aspect of keeping an eye out for the sheriff or the man or Smokey and trying to make sure that whatever your haul was didn't get actually confiscated. And it's well known at this point, NASCAR's very roots start within moonshine culture and the cars they used to soup up in order to get from places in North Carolina down to Knoxville.
Huh. Now, isn't there some, I've heard that there's a connection between moonshining back in the day and NASCAR. What is that connection?
The basic connection is that white liquor or moonshine can be burned in certain cars that don't have a lot of epoxy gaskets, and that's like current cars you couldn't run moonshine through and effectively keep the car running, because the moonshine itself would basically eat away at a lot of the tubes that were feeding the engine as well as the carburetor. So what they would do was they would take certain cars and they would go through the entire engine block and rebuild the car so that it could specifically haul shine. And what would happen is that these cars that could haul shine were going super fast. They would get to a point where they had to fill up and keep traveling through the mountains, and they didn't want to go in, because there weren't a lot of gas stations in the mountains back in the day. There aren't today. So literally they relied on moonshine to get them from point A to wherever they were traveling or sailing to in the mountains, use pirate terminology. And it could be several hundred miles, but they would cross through many jurisdictions, many states, just to run shine. And a lot of distribution centers were like I said, Knoxville, Asheville. The Apex area, Bristol, Tennessee, where Virginia and the interstates meet there. And the shine, of course, would go out throughout the United States. And popcorn capitalized on not the side of moonshine that was just the illicit trade, but he made moonshine in a very Linux kind of way, open source, so that people, like we were talking about earlier, could learn about it. The cars, as you had referenced, when NASCAR came about, it was due to dirt track driving. And dirt tracks would develop along places like Gaffney, Darlington, and a lot of these out-of-the-way places like Charlotte, where they would literally take these cars from the mountains. And when they weren't running shine, they would take these cars and they would run them around a track. And people would come to see these moonshine cars races. And that's the start of NASCAR.
Awesome. That is great. Yeah, and didn't they soup the cars up a lot?
Yes, they did.
I mean, for driving shine, so they could outrun the cops and the revenueers.
That's correct. They certainly did.
Talk more about that when we get back from this trip to the market, where I don't think we're selling any moonshine at this market, but it is the free market.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. This is what radio sounds like now.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
This is Michael Dean, and it's After Dark, and we're talking about Popcorn Sutton. And if you'd like to share your memories or thoughts on Popcorn Sutton, you can call in at 1-855-660-4261. That's 1-855-660-4261. That's if you're listening live, which means it's, let's see, it's about midnight 34 after midnight Central Time on Monday night, Tuesday morning, kind of, you know, that cusp. We're in that cusp. It's kind of hard to describe. So you can also, if you're one of my friends, if you're on my Skype, I'm not going to give out my Skype because I don't want to get up and add people in screen calls. But if you've Skyped me before and you know my Skype, you can Skype. And I prefer Skype to phone because then you sound good. And I have about, that's not just saying like, you know, my three friends can call in. I have like 400 people on Skype. So, Jack, why was Popcorn Sutton named Popcorn Sutton? You know that story?
I actually do. He was a big pool player back in the 60s and 70s. And you would have to travel for miles around just to get to a pool table in the mountains. So people that wanted to play pool would all gravitate together. And it was usually generally your rougher Appalachian crowd, the guys that the pastor or preacher, we would say here, warned you about. And so they would sell – they didn't have peanuts and pretzels back then. They had popcorn machines to kind of take the edge off the alcohol. So Popcorn was trying to – or his name is Marvin. He was trying to get popcorn from this machine, and when the machine wouldn't render it unto him, he took a pool cue and he attacked the machine.
Render unto Marvin what is Marvin's.
That is Marvin's.
Yeah.
which is, you know, he was famous for kind of these semi-biblical sayings too as well, where he would say, Jesus turned water into wine, I turned it into, I won't say it on the radio, but liquor.
Shine.
Yep, that's correct. But that's how he got his name, is by attacking a popcorn machine.
That's pretty funny, man.
Yeah.
Did you ever taste his wares?
I did. I have. He was a master at what he did. Nowadays, the shine has only gotten better. They switched over from pure copper pots to what would be considered glass lined, so that there is no taste of metal whatsoever until it goes through the copper itself, and that adds that unique flavor to it. But
technology improves everything, and then the government,
right.
the government gets in the way.
You
know what's funny? Because the FBI was founded literally on a principle, which was to prevent people from interfering with interstate commerce. Because before that, you had state police and local police, and literally someone could rob a bank, and as soon as they got to the state line, the cops would have to stop chasing them. So the FBI was formed. And, you know, then they got past they expanded from just bank robbers and got into other things. And they said that they existed, you know, that they were constitutionally based because of the Commerce Clause to protect interstate commerce. And really what all these federal agencies end up doing, you know, that are supposed to be protecting people from preventing people from interfering with interstate commerce, is all these federal agencies do all day long is interfere with interstate commerce.
That's absolutely what they do. And here in this region, there's a long history and tradition of making your own alcohol. It comes from the time period. The region was settled by Scotch-Irish, which were people that had lived in Scotland, moved to Ireland, lived in Scotland for a little bit more, moved to Ireland, and then sometime around the turn of the 1700s and the 1800s, a lot of them began to move over to the United States. And there was an old tradition where they would brew their own alcohol, and that came to the U.S., and it stuck with the mountains. So it's been here for hundreds of years to brew your own stuff. And, of course, if people are brewing their own stuff or growing their own stuff too, the government can't tax that. And that's a big no-no, of course. And they found these three-letter agencies to chase people around the United States.
To interfere with interstate commerce.
Commerce, that's right. And we're in a highly interstate area up through here, given the tri-state region.
What are the tri-states, the three states?
there's in the Southern Appalachians, there's two tri-state regions. The first one is North Carolina, Georgia, and Tennessee. The next one is, if you go up the range, up in the Smokies. There's Virginia, Tennessee, and North Carolina. And these are the main two areas that I'm familiar with that we have our interstate commerce, for sure.
There's are there any radio stations that say they're the most powerful station in the tri-state area?
There is one in Bristol that says it's the most powerful station. But if you get to the area where we're near here, there is nothing out in the tri-state. There's just literally a monument. That's all that's there.
There's a – you know what Part 15 radio stations are, right?
I do. That's, I believe, under – 500 milliwatts, I think.
100
that's right.
Milliwatts. But you, yeah, can actually, you can actually get a mile if you really do it right, but most people don't do it right. And there's a running joke. I told Ian Freeman that I call those stations the most powerful station in the tri-yard area, which is actually from King of the Hill, where Dale Gribble buys a radio transmitter from somebody and spends about 182 hours drinking Mountain Dew in his basement, sounding exactly like Art Bell. And getting more and more twisted.
Well, the Trilateral Commission embedded some implants in my teeth so they can listen to me.
Yeah, it was awesome.
It's one of my favorite shows.
Really is. That's great.
So with these tri-yard radio stations, I bet you that's an interesting concept. The area here, though, radio has a long, long history because it was the only way that you could get information back and forth. But the radios that were used were from Navy vessels that they brought inland, like ham radios, and there was a few gospel stations up in the mountains. And what people would do to listen to radio was they would get their radio and they would run a literal wire from the top of the mountain, either down the mountain or across the valley through what they would call a saddle. That's a place where two mountains meet. And they would get on the opposite side and they'd make that metal wire tight. And it was tight enough that they could actually pick up radio stations from across the area. But that's how far people would go to get radio and just to catch maybe like a gospel hour coming out in Knoxville or Bristol or other parts of North Carolina, and only on Sunday. And people would literally get, like the old days, they would literally get around the radio stations, and, or not the radio station, but the radio itself, and listen to the station that would come through.
I have an interesting story about Knoxville, but I don't want to hijack the conversation until we put a nice bouquet of flowers on Popcorn Sutton's grave. We got more on him?
Well, the what we were talking about during the break that I found very interesting was that you couldn't sell alcohol, of course, when people were voting on election day. So what Popcorn would do was he would meet people at the polling site, and he would actually go through the crowd and sell alcohol to folks or corn liquor to folks.
That's awesome.
That were out voting. So,
and you know, I wonder about why that's illegal, and it probably goes back to either blue laws, you know, the Baptists saying you got to have a clear head to pick your tyrants, or some tyrant was probably bribing people with alcohol to get their vote.
I think so. We have so many blue laws here. Some of them aren't even enforced. Well, South
tell
Carolina.
Me some of the sillier ones.
Well, the most well-known one is you couldn't buy alcohol and tobacco on Sundays. That was the first one that comes right off the bat.
Is that still enforced?
Yes, in certain parts of South Carolina, they actually still
tobacco.
Have.
Tobacco. You can't buy tobacco on Sunday.
Some places you could not buy tobacco on Sunday. Up until just recently here, I would walk into a grocery store and you weren't allowed to – they did not want you buying alcohol before 12 noon on Sunday. And you would literally walk in and that whole section of the store would be blocked out. And this was in Beer City, USA.
Because you got to go to church first.
Right. You've got to go to church. And some people do manage to find God in little boxes. but for the rest of us, we find him in the mountains. But yeah, that's one of the ones that we had to grow up with. The other blue laws would be like minors can't be outside past a certain time period. And I found this out the hard way. I was under 16 years old and I was skateboarding. A lot of people had never heard of skateboarding, but I had some friends from California, and I used to skate on old Tony Hawk back in the day, and I had Vans and the whole nine. And I was out, and 9 o'clock rolled around, and the cops pulled me right over, and they told me that I absolutely had to go home, and that there was a curfew, and it was one of the old blue laws that was left over from a while back.
You think about the basis of a lot of these blue laws, they're religiously based. You know, you can't be drinking Sunday morning. You got to be in church. You can't, you know, your kids. Basically, the thing of the curfew to me sounds like people trying to have the state raise their kids. And it's really bizarre to me to try to enforce anything that's religious that does not have a victim. You know, obviously, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal. But, you know, honoring the Sabbath, like there's no person that's a victim of that. And it really seems to me that if you believe in freedom of choice and you believe that you have a choice to live what you believe is a godly life, and you don't want to force people to do it because then they're not being good Christians or Muslims or whatever religion, you know, they're not I just don't understand religious laws, religiously based laws it's Sharia, you know, it's Americans. Mm-hmm. Americans are like, we don't want Sharia law coming here. And it's like, that's Christian Sharia, man, saying you can't drink before noon on Sunday.
I heard you mention that term.
A lot of people hate it, man. People get really mad.
I think it's pretty accurate though.
It's actually it's not. And my Muslim friend, I'm a hip guy. I have one Muslim friend, my friend Davi Barker, and my friend Will Coley. I've talked to Davi a lot more, but we've interviewed Will a couple times, and they are Muslims and, you know, libertarian, anarcho-capitalist voluntarists. And both of them explained to me that it's actually insulting to Islam, not to Christian, because Sharia is religious. It's what you're supposed to do to be a good Muslim. It's not supposed to be law, you know? It's not supposed to be enforced by goons with swords and guns. We'll be back.
This radio show is called Michael Dean After Dark. Go to michaelwdean.com to help keep it drone-proof.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away, 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
Coming up here to the end of hour one, but we'll be back for hour two after this. And we were talking about all sorts of things Appalachian here. We're talking about Popcorn Sutton and how they celebrate his birth and the day that he was taken from this mortal coil by the actions of the federal government, directly or indirectly. And we're talking about blue laws, and Jack Johnson is here to tell us about the most annoying blue law in Appalachia. What is it, Jack?
This one we ignored quite a bit growing up. It was not shooting on Sunday.
Ugh, you're kidding, man.
That is true. There are various blue laws on the books. These two are combined. No hunting or no fishing or no shooting on Sunday. And I know it sounds ridiculous, but we didn't obey it here, but in counties like Greenville, South Carolina, they did actually chase people down if they heard them shooting on Sunday.
I thought a lot of I mean, when did that law come from? Like, what anti-gun Christians were there in Appalachia back in the 30s or 1830s when that was written?
I think the thing was they would be in church on a Sunday morning and
they didn't want to hear it.
Extenuated gunfire to Psalms or something. So
turning it into the 1812 overture.
Yeah, the overture. But yeah, I remember wanting to go out on Sunday mornings. I would visit family in the low country, and I would say, oh, well, this is great. I'm in flat country. I can go shoot in a flat field, and I can see where I'm shooting. And they would say, nope, can't shoot. Sheriff will show up. So.
I actually like shooting where there's hills. For some reason, I don't know if this is a trick of vision or something, but I tend to be more accurate after 300 yards if I'm shooting across a valley to a hill or a little up a hill than if I'm shooting flat in a field. I don't know. Do you have that experience?
I did. When I was in the infantry, we had an advanced rifle course, and I shot way better when I was shooting across to another mountain or hill. And I noticed that dynamic. I don't know why that is.
Maybe there's sort of a parallax type distortion from the ground, from flat ground, you know, from heat rising up from
heat,
it or something.
Right, yeah.
Maybe
that
it's
could
that.
Be it. Yeah.
I don't like know. I'm much more accurate. Like, and Nima, I noticed that with him too. At the beginning of the movie Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, he shoots this dinner plate, and it's, we measured it with a rangefinder. It's 380 yards away. Now, he in the movie, it looks like he just shoots it. He actually got it on the second shot, but he chipped it on the first shot. If you look really close on the high def of that and look at it big on YouTube and freeze it, you can see there's a chip in the upper right corner. And it was pretty far away. Like, we had to go through hill and dale to climb up and put it there. It took about 20 minutes to walk from where we were shooting to go place that plate up there and then walk back.
Now, yeah. Wasn't he using open iron sights?
He was using a Mosin Nagant with open iron sights. Yeah, a rifle from 1943. It was my wife's Mosin Nagant. Bought it at a gun show here in Wyoming. It was actually used to kill Nazis by some commies. So it was my friend has a term, rifle of empire. I really like that. It's for the Mosin Nagant, the Enfield, the M1 Garand, and the Mauser. He calls them the rifle of empire. You know, for all the World War I to World War II era rifles that were, you know, the big superpowers of the world had.
Yeah, I've got a
they're all pretty similar, actually.
I'll tell you about it a little bit later if the break catches us here, but I've got a custom CMP American made Mosin Nagant. They've got a fairly interesting
who made it? Was it Westinghouse?
New England Westinghouse made it in 1914.
Yeah, so. the company that makes the headlights on cars. Yeah, that's wartime, man. They just call up the industrialists and say, you know, switch from making headlights to making rifles, and they say, yes, sir. And then, you know, then Uncle Sam drives a dump truck full of money up every hour to keep things humming.
They almost went broke with the Mosins that they had actually made.
Why?
Because Imperial Russia went from being Imperial Russia to Communist Russia overnight, and they couldn't sell them back. First government.
Well, they were lease loan too. But
right.
We'll be back with hour two of Michael Dean After Dark after this little trip to the market.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. Go to michaelwdean.com. That's michaelwdean.com.
Good evening, my fellow worms.
I know some things.
I'll be back with more later on.
I'm never satisfied.
This is Michael Dean After Dark.
The stato sperimentato.
We have enough
on
the United States government presents
no vision. Congrats.
Not having enough money.
The power was so great.
Esto por su parte considera
to provide guidance to mankind.
Go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. We'll be back for hour two after this trip to the market on Michael Dean After Dark.
Bye for now.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
Good evening, Liberty lovers and freedom fiends. This is Michael Dean. It's After Dark. This is hour two of the nightly weeknight show, Michael Dean After Dark. And if the hamster in your brain is driving you insane, you can call us. And the call-in number is 1-855-660-4261. That's 1-855-660-4261. And we're going to talk a little bit more about Popcorn Sutton and the majesty that is his memory and his legacy and the majesty that was his life. So Jack Johnson, tell me more about Popcorn.
The things to keep in mind is that when we remember who this person was, he was an entrepreneur. The Appalachian region has always been a fairly economically depressed area. And he would do things like meet in Maggie Valley and charge folks to take pictures with him, as well as actually show them how to make shine. He was fairly famous for it. Bill Buford's article covered a story I had not heard of before about him showing up to the Museum of Appalachia, and he basically set his still up. And as people came in, the sample is where he got folks drunk, and the folks running the museum told him he had to kick rocks, as we would
like,
say.
Like, that's not part of Appalachia. It is.
Yeah, it totally is. And but it's how to turn a buck when you don't have anything. And that's the ultimate form of resourcefulness.
Yeah, man.
And it's amazing. And when you look at folks that just sit around and say, well, there's no way that I can actually make a dollar, or I'm not going to be able to get out of this hollow, as some folks would put it. He was able to become world famous, and not only just world famous, but very celebrated. You mentioned that Hank Williams Jr. actually has a new line of corn liquor.
No, I did not mention that, but that's worth mentioning. But his son, yes. Hank III, mentions Popcorn right. in a song.
That's right. Yeah, and so Hank Jr.
Hank III was supposed to be on Freedom Fiends, and he slept through it, man.
What?
I had that all set up. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, I always say that he was passed out under a pile of whiskey bottles and tranny hookers and couldn't make it to the phone.
Well, that's kind of funny you talk about Hank Williams Jr. It's the running joke around here is, what Earnhardt are we on right now?
so, what are we on?
I think we're on two. I think there's only two in that line. But that's indicative of Southern culture anyway. It's like everybody's named after their dad anyway. But Popcorn, when we talk about libertarian values, he was a paragon of what it meant to be living free, even when the man was trying to get him down. And they tried a lot. One of the stories I also saw in Bill Buford's article, and this is very well researched, is Bill from around here? Do you know?
I do not know.
Yeah, I'm amazed at some of the things.
He seems a little Southern to me.
Okay.
I know he lives in Arizona, but so I don't know if it's his voice or his attitude, but he seems a little Southern to me.
He doesn't have my deep set of accent,
no.
But he's definitely got the vibe, especially that story about him going through the airport. And that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's not radio friendly, but Bill was on the same, or I don't even know if on the same flight. They took the same flight after that, but they were in the TSA roundup together when Davi got searched for Bitcoin, which is ridiculous. You can't do that, but they tried.
Well, it's amazing to me that they didn't know what Bitcoin was, even old people in the mountains up here realize it's a digital currency. That tells you how far the TSA is behind at times.
Is there anybody taking Bitcoin for moonshine?
I don't know. That'd be an interesting business enterprise. I should check into it. But the amount of times that Popcorn did actually get arrested for selling shine, I think on public record was around 4 or 5. Wow. And even when he did get arrested the final time with the ATF, he set out to ruin several thousand gallons as soon as he could. So
oh, man.
He knew it was his last time. And but, you know, the man believed in carrying a piece. He believed in living the life. And he also didn't accept any – we were talking about this. I don't know if we mentioned this on air, but he would not allow anybody to buy anything for his funeral. He paid for his entire funeral out of pocket. When he was sick or he had to go and grab medicine, he paid for it out of pocket. He did not want to depend upon the government. And that actually still is a ideal that exists today. It may not exist in places like Asheville where people are used to living off the government dole. But
Is that a dig at the people up the mountain?
It's just a fact. It's because there's
people
a
on
lot
welfare everywhere, but you know.
But I mean, it's fairly prodigious in town there. But if you get outside of those metropolitan areas, when you get into actual authentic Appalachian culture, people will not take money from the government. People say, "Well, all these Appalachian people live in absolute poverty," and but at the same time, they don't. They know that if you take something from the government's going to want something in return.
Yeah. There's no free lunch, and the federal government has made a career out of proving that, man. Not only is it stolen from someone else, but even when they give it to you, there are deep, deep strings around your throat and your toes attached. Some people don't care, though, man. They like it.
They do like it. And like I said, it wasn't a dig on the adjacent town, but it's just the way it is. It's divergence of cultures, because a lot of the tourist areas, the people that – like you're from upstate New York, which is far different than people that grew up in New York City.
I'm from a couple miles shy of the furthest you can be from New York City and still be in New York State. I'm from the far left tip, the little pointy part that stabs Pennsylvania on Lake Erie.
Mm-hmm. I remember meeting folks that were from New York State, and we really liked those guys and girls that came down. Our main issue in the mountains here is when people move in from New York City and New Jersey proper. And when I say New Jersey proper, I don't mean the Pine Barrens. I mean from Atlantic City and New Jersey. And they actually move into the mountains and they try to change Appalachian culture. And usually it's for the worse. They bring their own form of tyranny down with them. And people that live in the mountains aren't used to the amount of regulations and laws that they pass. And they get right into the town and they immediately start running for city council and running for various offices. And y'all are used to it up there where there's a huge difference between how a guy out in New York State living near the whites or the greens behaves as compared to somebody from you know, Mayor Bloomberg or former Mayor Bloomberg's country. So we weren't used to that. We're not used to having a lot of folks telling us what to do.
I don't usually like anything politicians do, but occasionally something makes me giggle. There's a junior, well, not junior, there's a state rep in Wyoming. I forget his name, but he's the youngest one. He's like 24. And, you know, he's a small government Republican type. And there's some lady who'd moved to his district from California, and she wrote a letter to her representative, you know, to him saying, "I don't like that I see people open carrying pistols sometimes." And he wrote her back a really eloquently worded letter that actually went viral. It got reprinted in the local paper and then went international. And it basically, the last paragraph, it was something like, "Well, madam, if you do not like our culture here, I invite you to promptly move back to California." And he caught so much crap for that. But That's what anybody he quote unquote represents would tell this lady if confronted. And, you know, he was asked to apologize and he did not, which is pretty bold. And I have a lot of respect. Well, I don't know. It's hard to respect a politician, but as they go, you know, I guess it's in Wyoming, the districts are so small and there's so, so little, probably so little room for graft at the state rep level that people don't really have anything to lose by speaking their mind, you know?
The here it's in regards to like showing people, you hear Missouri is called the show me state.
Yeah.
In the mountains technically here, the southeastern Appalachians should be called a come on, I'll show you states. And we did actually secede from the Union as a region
secede.
I'm sorry. My bad.
Like I was voted in high school most likely to secede.
Oh Lord. Apologize. Like I said, it's about 2 o'clock here. I am tired. But we left the Union and became the state of Franklin back during the Civil War.
I've heard that.
Because,
yeah,
a lot of folks in the mountains decided they did not want to be part of the Union or the Confederacy, which surprised a fair bit of people. But that's just the way the culture has evolved. It's independence, wanting to strike out on your own, and wanting to be not commanded by some type of state authority. And even the pastors, they are preachers, as we would call them here, they would have a hard time getting some folks in the Sunday school on certain mornings. But but for the most part, people respected men of the cloth more in the mountains because they weren't as overbearing as they were in other places because they usually came from this culture and they knew how everybody was. Because the same preacher would probably go out illegally hunting with you on Sunday that just gave you the sermon. So.
You know, I have to ask, it's something that people who aren't from there always want to know about. What about the snake handling?
Oh, that's great. I have a friend who's a herpetologist, and he has various venomous snakes in his home, but he also keeps stats on people that are coming to the hospital in the various regions of the mountains who get bitten by snakes. And the ones that you see come up the most usually come from the Cumberland Plateau region of the mountains here, in addition to West Virginia. So it's still here, and people get bit all the time snake handling. But it's something that goes back to here we go.
we'll be back with more libertarian snake handling after this trip to the market for some snake bite kits.
You were destined to be listening to this show, Michael Dean After Dark, on this very night. Thank you for arriving. You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Guns and Weed, Buy Sheep for Sheep on Sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
This is Michael Dean After Dark. And people were asking me. People asked me during the break, Jack, a person asked me, what did you want to ask me?
Basically, what's the name of the place that you're from up in the north in New York, in the upper state of New York?
Westfield is the town I was born in, and it's on Lake Erie. It's far western New York. It's in Chautauqua County. which is the westernmost county of New York. It's as far from New York City as you can be. I was about 10 miles from the Pennsylvania border. I was almost as far as you could be from New York City, like 500 miles. And yeah, that is a state that has, you know, it might as well be the South, but it's got the laws of New York City attached to it, basically, and it's not a good thing. I told someone the other day, I noticed they recently passed a bunch more gun laws in New York State and made a bunch of honest people into criminals by banning mags of reasonable bullet count. And they've actually put up signs that said, if you know anyone who's got these things, turn them in and get $500. And I did the math on this, and that is literally, at the time they did it, it's gone down a little bit since then, but at the time they did it, that was literally 30 pieces of silver.
Wow.
Yeah, turn in your neighbor for what they sold Jesus out for. It was because the pieces of silver of the Bible are largely believed to have been a certain coin that was a half ounce of silver. So 15 ounces of silver plus what you'd pay in state tax for having gotten the silver from the state and federal tax would be almost exactly $500 when they were doing that, when they first started doing that. So, yeah.
Wow. Well, that's generally how gun banners work. But yep. Where the place that you're from in upstate Chautauqua, is that right?
Well, Chautauqua is a lake. About 10 miles from where I'm from. There's also a town in Chautauqua and a place called Chautauqua Institution.
Got it.
Which is, my mother had a store in Chautauqua Institution. It's a kind of a summer arts resort, I guess I'd say. I mean, they have like, you know, the youth orchestra there, like the third chair in the youth orchestra there is made up of the, you know, the first chair from some other orchestra. It's got amazing classical music, dance. It actually began in 1864 as a place to teach Sunday school teachers, and they didn't even have any buildings. It was just tents. And then it kind of they added other things to it, kind of entertainment, and it became kind of a traveling thing. Like there's actually a concept of the Chautauqua, which means a kind of a traveling state of the mind. The book Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance talks a lot about searching for his Chautauqua of the mind. And there's an album by Pat Metheny called New Chautauqua. It's a jazz fusion album, of course. Although I don't think jazz fusion is very well represented at Chautauqua. Well, there is an amphitheater there that occasionally has. I saw some amazing acts at that amphitheater because basically there's a gate around three sides of Chautauqua. And there's a lake on one side, and it's literally like 1 square mile. And it costs, oh, I don't know, 25 years ago, last time I was there, it was probably $600 for a full summer ticket to get in and out. Wow. You have to display it and show it to little guards when you go in and out the gate. And, I mean, I saw some, but you get in free to the amphitheater there. But basically, you're just paying to have a right to be in the place. And, yeah, I saw Dave Brubeck there, the Dave Brubeck Five, when it was his sons as his backing band in like, 1975 probably. And I saw a lot of really amazing acts there. And some kind of cheesy amazing acts too. Like I saw who's the guy that did Feel So Good? He plays himself on King of the Hill.
I don't recall Chuck, right off the bat. Yeah.
Yeah, Chuck, what's his name? Chuck not Norris. Yeah, but that guy, I saw him on that tour, like when that record was a huge hit. It's pretty funny. And it's a weird audience, too, because like people that have the summer passes there just go no matter what's there. So you had like, you know, you have like the 10,000 Maniacs played there one time because they're local band, basically. They're from there. I used to see them all the time. I've seen them more than I've seen any band because I used to see them. They were the only thing to do at Jamestown, New York, when I went to college there. You know, I went and saw them every weekend, two nights for a couple of years. But they played there, and you'd have a bunch of like old blue haired ladies like clapping kind of off time with 10,000 Maniacs or Dave Brubeck. But yeah.
We have a number of folks that moved down from back. A lot of our neighbors are in the 40s and or late 30s, and they grew up in New York, but they grew up in New York during a time period when there was a lot of camp culture where you guys are from.
Cool, man. We'll talk about that more when we get back from the market.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. And yes, we're broadcasting this message into space.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
It's Michael Dean After Dark on a snowy night in Wyoming. A snowy dark night in Wyoming. And we were talking about church stories. We were trading church stories when we were going back and forth, and I got a little church story to tell. It actually is secondhand because it happened before I was born, but I was raised Presbyterian, and then I went off to an Episcopal boarding school, which I call Episcopalianism Catholicism light. It's like Catholicism with half the guilt. But my sisters and brother, my older sisters and brother, were raised Baptist because my parents were Baptist. And this is the story, it's a very brief story of how they stopped being Baptist, was they had a hellfire and brimstone preacher, and they went to church every Sunday. They had a farm. They were farmers, my parents and my brothers and sisters. And, you know, they raised cattle, and they went to this this little wooden church. I've seen it. My dad's pointed the building out to me. It's still there. And he said that they didn't go for about 3 weeks because they were having problems with the cattle, and they had to stay home and work on them on Sunday and keep them healthy. And they finally got them fixed and got the cattle fixed and went back to church. And the preacher said to my family, and then picked out my sister, the younger sister, it was before I was born, but she was probably 8. And he got up in her face and he said that little girls who miss church go to hell and burn in a fiery lake. And my mother just didn't like that. And she said, Jesus loves the little children. That's no way to speak to a child. We're leaving this church and finding another. And she grabbed the kids by the hand and marched out. And my dad kind of went, what's going on? And followed her out. And they became Presbyterians the following week.
So did you, when you were growing up, did you guys, you said you were Episcopalian. Did you become Episcopalian later in life? Or
I never really became Episcopalian. My family didn't either. They were Presbyterian. I got shipped off to a boarding school when I was 14 that was Episcopalian. Mm-hmm. It was called the Church Farm School in Paoli, Pennsylvania, which is in the it's in the region of Pennsylvania, which is lovingly referred to as Pennsyltucky. You ever heard of Pennsyltucky?
I definitely have heard the term Pennsyltucky.
It's basically everything. It's the southern strip, you know, 50 miles, the 50 southern miles all the way across the bottom of the state from Pittsburgh to Philly without Pittsburgh and Philly. And it is called Pennsyltucky. It's nowhere near Kentucky, but it is very near Kentucky in a lot of ways. It's very much like Kentucky, so it's called Pennsyltucky. There's actually a character named Pennsyltucky in that show Orange is the New Black. You ever seen that?
Mm-mm, I have not seen that one, though.
It's an amazing show.
Is that the show about the girls going to prison, though?
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, and there's a girl in the prison who hates her and tries to make her life hell, who is nicknamed Pennsyltucky. And I guess the backstory on her is that she was going for her 6th abortion, and the lady at the abortion clinic like looked at her chart and said, "Oh, it's your 6th. They should give you a card to stamp. This one should be free." And she got really incensed and walked out to her boyfriend's truck. Her boyfriend was waiting for her. He didn't even go in. Just, yeah, this is so regular. We do this all the time. I'll park outside. And she grabbed his shotgun from the rack in his truck. And while he's yelling, "Hey, where are you going with my squirrel gun?" And she went back into the abortion clinic and shot the nurse in the butt for insulting her. And, you know, was arrested for attempted murder. And, you know, had a public defender, was facing a lot of time in prison. And some Christian anti-abortion group provided her with a really high-end attorney and got her like 18 months of, you know, soft time, not hard time. And so she had to kind of become Christian to make that work. And then she just kind of ended up believing it and became a very devout and self-righteous Christian who kind of has her little flock of other lost young girls in the prison that she's always accidentally misquoting Bible verse to.
That's a unique spin on prison religion. Yeah. A lot of people get into it.
It is a, you know, there's trench, foxhole religion, you know, this prison mm-hmm. religion, but that is a great story in that show of how that happened.
You had asked earlier about, in addition to camp stories and church and snake handlers, sometimes that stuff can all run together and actually manifest in reality as being a true event. When we grew up, camp culture was big. My dad was a forest ranger.
What is camp culture? What do you mean by that?
Like where you grew up during the summertime, it's like the town would become just blossom. And I don't like using that term, but I guess I'm going to use it. And people would come in from all over the place, and kids would go to summer camp, and it just seemed like the town would come alive, and that kind of.
I don't know. Thing. Maybe for me, summer camp was always a threat if I didn't straighten up. And it wasn't even like, you know, reform camp. It was like the summer camp all the other kids wanted to go to, I really didn't want to go to. And if I would do something wrong in their eyes, they would threaten to send me to summer camp. I was not into camp culture, let's put it that way.
Well, we doubled up on that. We had Bible camp here.
Do you have snake handling Bible camp?
We did. The guy that ran the camp turned 20 years later when I got back out from the military, he got arrested for doing bad things as some pastors do at summer camps.
To kids, you mean?
Yeah,
he was touching correct. The kids.
Yeah, he Ugh. Was. But we were at this one camp and I didn't want to go at all. I had to quit karate for the summer and I remember being so scared of these people that I packed up all my ninja throwing stars and nunchucks in one of those wooden wine boxes and I snuck it in the summer camp with me. And I wanted to be undercover so much that I wore sunglasses. Of course, they didn't miss the guys sitting in the pew wearing the sunglasses. But at that point, the theme was that they wanted to talk us away from the sins of Led Zeppelin.
Oh yeah,
and
so, I got stories after this. Go on.
But so the guy in question gets up, and he's looking at the entire crowd, and he starts to sing the song, and he says, "And this is how they lure you in." And he sang Stairway to Heaven almost. I mean, if Robert Plant was there, he would have loved it. And then halfway through the song, the guy's looking at us and he just stops, and a dog, because it was in the South, the camp was open, and right in the middle of this camp chapel walks this dog, and he says, "Don't mind that hound of hell." He said, "That's just the devil trying to take you guys' attention off the sermon." And it wasn't really a sermon. It was this guy actually doing this great rendition of Led Zeppelin in the middle of summer camp. And that's when I knew things had gone south wacky. And it was the same camp that the snake handlers would come to when the children weren't there. They would actually rent it out for folks that also did snake handling.
How do people in the South feel about using the phrase, "it went south"? They just assume you're talking about Florida, right? Or Mexico.
Yeah. When you say it here, it literally means that things are as bad as it possibly can
get. That's what it means here. That's what it means everywhere. Yeah. But it's interesting. I never asked anyone, heard anyone from the South use it.
But yeah, we do use that term, but to us, it means the same as it does for anybody else. Things are just going bad. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if that preacher with the confronting the dog, if he did that every summer, if he had like a dog handler out in the, you know, dog wrangler, like, come on, puppy, go in, or like, you know, hid some sausages under the pulpit or something.
I would have been more amazed if he'd actually switched the singing hair of the dog. I mean,
or Black Dog by Led Zeppelin.
That's right.
Yeah.
But it was obvious this guy actually knew how to sing. And then later on at the end of camp, he did play electric guitar at the end of camp. So he had a little bit of repressed rock star in him.
As a Christian, how do you feel about the threat of rock and roll?
I don't really think about it.
You're not threatened by rock and roll?
No, I don't.
You know, I just had a thought. I mean, I encountered some of those, you know, play the records back and you'll go to hell kind of people. In my college, there was a guy that was touring the country and going to colleges. And I actually went voluntarily. I was just like, this, I think I got stoned. I was like, yeah, this sounds like a hoot. And I went and listened to him just rant. And, you know, I was just thinking about it. I wonder if it was like revenge for the Beatles. Because the Beatles, you know, John Lennon said, we're bigger than Jesus.
Right.
And the thing was, the interesting thing about him saying that was he didn't just say it and then there was a fallout. He actually said it in an interview and it just went nowhere for like 9 months. And then they did an American tour and somebody in the South, I forget which state, looked it up. They were like researching, like, oh, these people sound scary. We need to find out how we can stop them. And they found that quote in a 9-month-old interview. And then it became viral, shall we say, before the internet. And, you know, he wasn't saying we're better than Jesus. I think he was probably accurate at the time. He was saying, you know, then there's a longer quote that it's excerpted from, but it's basically that more people in the world, you know who the Beatles are right now than know who Jesus is. And that it probably was not true, but it was probably, there were probably more young people excited about the Beatles than Jesus in the world. And, you know, the Beatles were so, when they said that too, it was like, I think 1966 or so. I mean, the Beatles were like still singing Love Me Do kind of stuff. And it's like, that wasn't scary. Led Zeppelin is scary, and I love Led Zeppelin, and they're kind of scary to me. They have so much power, and they're so dark, and I don't think it comes from the devil, but it's really hypnotic and seductive and wonderful. And I really wonder if it was like, well, we couldn't stop the Beatles, and these Led Zeppelin fellas are even scarier, you know?
Well, what's ironic was I forget the name of the guy from the band that bought the place in Scotland that Crowley actually owned.
That was Jimmy Page.
Jimmy Page, yeah. And because I remember he was sitting on the bank of the house, or bank of the lock next to the house. And when he turned around in that one video and his eyes were red, I remember that. But
that's in the song Remains the Same at hour 1 minute 24, 32 seconds. No, I'm kidding, but it is in that movie.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if you did remember it, because when I first saw it, it definitely
scared the hell out of me. I actually saw that movie. I snuck out of the church farm school with two friends and walked 2 miles down the railroad track to a midnight showing of that at the King of Prussia Mall in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, in Pennsylvania. We'll be back for the final segment of Michael Dean After Dark after this trip to the free and libertarian market.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. Meowbit is free software from the Freedom Fiends that allows you to effortlessly view .bit websites. Meowbit works on all browsers. .bit is a new type of web address that's not controlled by any government or corporation. And we'll show you how to register a .bit domain today using a few cents worth of Namecoin. If anyone ever shuts down your .com website, users will still be able to get to your site using your .bit address and our free software, Meowbit. Go to meowbit.com. That's meowbit.com.
This is Michael Dean After Dark. You know it. You know it's true. This is Michael Dean After Dark, and I was going to tell a little story here that's barely radio friendly, but I was telling Jack Johnson, my friend Jack Johnson from North Carolina, that I had a story about Knoxville, Tennessee, and it is that when I was in a rock and roll band called Bomb, we played in Knoxville one time, and we played a pizza parlor, and that sounds ridiculous, but it was a pizza parlor that served beer. They had a bar. I think they served liquor, too. It was a pizza parlor with liquor, and it was a packed show, man. It was like 120 people in a room that held about 50, and it was great. We rocked the house, and beautiful girl came up to me afterwards. Beautiful. Just I don't even want to describe her because it would be crass, but just picture whatever you think of as a beautiful young woman, and this is probably pretty close. And she came up to me, just like put her arm around me as soon as we were done. And she wasn't drunk and she didn't smell and she didn't seem too crazy. And I just like took her by the hand and started making out with her. And that happened sometimes back then, not every night, but it happened. And it wasn't always a beautiful girl. It wasn't always a girl. But so she and I wanted to, you know, hang out and spend a little time together. And we didn't have a place to go because the band was going to like party with the owner of the bar at his house. And it was like one big room somewhere, they told us. So he let me and this girl sleep in the bar. And we, how should we say it, made sweet, sweet love. It was actually kind of sweet, very aggressive, slappy love, very mutually slappy love. On the stage where my band had just rocked the house. Now, I've done this two or three times in my life. It's a special kind of ritual, shall we say. Being on the stage where you just performed. And we did this like all night, and you know, the lights were on in the bar, but you know, it was kind of dim, and we kind of made, he told me like, yeah, just don't drink from the bar. But I drank from the bar. and I found out later that the reason he let me stay in the bar was him and his buddies all came back and peeked through the window for a couple hours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's kind of embarrassing. And that girl later like moved out to San Francisco and showed up on my doorstep and said, "Hi, I'm here to be with you." And I was like, "Oh, cool. Meet my girlfriend, Vicky." You know, and this girl's name was Michelle. And I was like, "Oh, Michelle, hi, meet Vicky." And, you know, we all three kind of lived in the same bed for a couple weeks until, you know, that never really works out because somebody always feels a little left out, and it could go back and forth from one person to the other to the other. So yeah, that's my story about Knoxville. And we're on the radio in Knoxville, and I never told that story on the radio in Knoxville, but I did tell the story about the time I got beat up in Knoxville and totally deserved it.
Oh, wow.
But I'm not going to retell that because this is redemption in the third act. What do you got there to put the little kitty cats to sleep happy and mellow and not full of worry and fear like the world tends to put in our heads?
Well, we were going to just basically mention that
Popcorn final, Sutton, something about Popcorn, yeah, Sutton, perhaps.
Exactly.
All right. Go for it, man.
Since we're on that. Just wherever you're at in this world, the thing is to live as free as you can. And even though you wouldn't think that, if you have the restrictions of quote unquote, Appalachian culture or Christian culture of Appalachia, we still live as free as we possibly can. And that means we go by the dictates of our heart. You know, we kind of follow the Ten Commandments. We don't mess with anybody, you know, and we make
moonshine. Apparently
we make moonshine and
I don't
do unto our neighbors with good shine.
I might, if I drank, I might, but I don't drink. I drank enough that I had to stop.
No, ironically,
government forced me, no judge, no wife. I just had to stop. That's 20 years ago, July 7th.
Amen. No, I don't drink that much either, so I feel you. It's only on a rare occasion that I'll drink, but I do have friends that still drink. But wherever you're at, just live as free as possible. And I think that's the thing about Popcorn, that he definitely lived his life to the fullest. And even when the man had him down, he would just get back up and keep on going.
I don't even look at it as he committed suicide. I looked at it as he checked out when it was time. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it's considered ethical for a soldier who's captured and going to be tortured to give up information on his buddies, you know, to take his own life. So stay alive, kiddies, as long as you can. Fight a good fight with your soul and your mind. It's Michael Dean. Take care until tomorrow night, and we'll be back. Thanks, Jack Johnson.
This has been Michael Dean After Dark. I hope we've helped calm the hamster in your brain and left you in a better place than where we found you. We'll be here 5 nights a week, same time and channel. In the meantime, go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. Thank you and have a wonderful evening. Good night.